I have to say, I think I'm tone deaf. I cannot find the middle C on a piano. However, I love Sonic. I did in my science classes. I love the idea of strings vibrating and all those math problems or physics problems. And then I love humanism. So when you combine Sonic humanism, I find that really appealing. So Amy, what is Sonic humanism?
Sonic humanism, which we define as the power of sound to make our lives richer and simpler. I also think of it as sound that can make our lives more emotional and intuitive, or more visceral and clear, more enjoyable, more efficient, more joyful, and also more universally understood. And a lot of that is backed by sort of the research and to a degree sort of the science behind sound and why it makes us have the reactions that we do and how we communicate with each other.
My guest this week is Amy Crawford, the head of creative music and culture at Made Music Studios in New York. And she's a leading expert on the topic of sonic humanism. Amy, welcome to Life Meet Tech.
Thank you again for having me.
What does make music do?
Sonic humanism is really a guiding principle and the North Star for everything that we do at Made Music Studio. We like to call ourselves a global sonic studio born from entertainment, and we look to solve human and business challenges using music and sound. What does that mean? Made Music started about 20 years or so ago. Joel Beckerman is our founder, and he started out in the film scoring space, in the television scoring space, and over time began to ask really probing questions around, what else can I score if I understand the power of music and sound, the power of how I can leverage that to create emotional connection, to become a memory trigger for people to remember things by? How might I be able to score things outside of just what I see on a television screen or on a film screen?
I understand the emotionality of sound, especially when you think about music, right? And somehow it goes deep into our psyche and it touches our memories in very primitive ways, I think. But what about the soundscape that we live in, the dings, the swooshes, the noises, all these alerts and everything that we have in this new tech environment? How does that create the sonic experience for us?
Well, it's hugely important. One of the things that we've tried to uncover and illuminate over the years is the subconscious responses that we have to sound. Our reaction time to sound is much quicker than anything else in terms of touch, sight, taste, and smell. So, you know, really sound as an organizing sense, I think, is a really powerful thing for us to try to leverage. And when we talk about the sounds that we hear out in our world, those dings, those rings, the sounds of entertainment, the sounds of the robots that we interact with, we're really trying to educate folks and illuminate the opportunity to make those sounds more considered in their design. Over time, we've done a lot of research and we've developed a system called the Sonic Humanism Spectrum, which is a way in which we've been able to measure the implicit emotional appeal of sounds, meaning we can ask somebody, did you like how that experience sounded? And people will say, I like guitars, therefore I liked this music, or, you know, those kind of more explicit reactions you might have to sound. We've really tried to uncover sort of the implicit emotional reaction to sound. We've actually found that there's an 86% correlation between the sound of an experience and your desire to engage with or avoid that experience again in the future, which is a very powerful metric that, again, not many people are necessarily thinking about when you think about an interface and the sound design or the sounds that you might hear in an environment that you are in. But it is clearly a very powerful tool in the toolbox that we like to think about in terms of how we can design experiences or even redesign experiences that are already existing.
Can you give me an example of a terrific experience high on the sonic humanism scale and a really junky sound experience or sonic experience?
Yeah. So I'm going to play the first audio file for you right now. We'll just listen to that.
Okay.
And see what that sounds like.
Oh, it's a baby giggling, I think.
Yes. That's actually the sound that scored the highest on our sonic humanism spectrum when we tested all kinds of sounds out in the world, both natural sounds and music and branded sounds that people have created over time, what we found is there is just a really high, positive, implicit emotional response to baby laughter.
I'm not surprised.
That is clearly a biological thing.
Right.
You know, in terms of sort of our desire to nurture and what that means kind of on a really basic biological level to us as humans.
What would you consider a soothing sound that was done really well?
Well, there's another thing I can kind of share with you.
Sure.
In terms of sort of a pre and post, as we think about one area that's really been a focus for us over the years, which is healthcare. I can play our example here. We'll listen for just a few seconds. Maybe okay. We can fade it down and tell me if you recognize where we are.
Sounds like an ER.
Yes, or an emergency room. Sound obviously plays a big role in these spaces. And, you know, we've had a lot of conversations over the years with people in the medical field who have talked about this idea of alarm fatigue. Again, when you have all of these machines, you know, making these sounds and these beeps or respirators, in addition to sort of the ambient noise of a space like a hospital, you know, we really want to question and challenge the idea of whether that is promoting an environment that is conducive towards healing. And, you know, those things can really impact how a patient feels in that experience, as well as I think that can impact somebody's recovery time. You know, biophilic sound and biophilic design is a really interesting place where a lot of hospitals are playing now or starting to play in terms of thinking about how do I bring more plants into an office environment? How do I bring water features? And so we've sort of concocted into sort of what we call a sonic journey, which is something we've experimented with in terms of better understanding how sound can really center and ground us and even do things like slow our heart rate and put us into more of a state of relaxation. And you can hear something that we've designed with that in mind to think about how sound can be a healing tool for patients and for people working in a medical space.
Sure, let's try it.
So again, imagine the idea that if we could soundscape our medical spaces or our healing spaces with something like this, you know, we've seen that we can inspire people or move people to a greater state of relaxed productivity, that they might find an experience more calming, more pleasant than typical. And again, it's just another tool in the toolbox when we sort of think about just experience and how sort of the ambient sounds of our everyday lives can really be better crafted and better considered, you know, in spaces like healthcare.
That's terrific. I love that example. One of the compelling experiences in my life, this was sort of a flow state experience. I was in Taiwan, this beautiful hotel that overlooked the ocean, and they had the spa. And when I went into the spa, the music and the ambiance of the space was so, it was almost like a spiritual experience. You just, in the power of placemaking and audio that created the sense of transportation. I thought I was in a different place. It was just very compelling. So I am with you 100% in terms of what sound can do and how a soundscape can be so powerful. But what I've not heard from you is great companies like Meta, Microsoft, and Google. If you look at the visuals and if you look at the font, the amount of money they've spent on coming up with just the right font that can be read on screens, that can be read on mobile devices. Where is that kind of commitment to creating the stylistic elements and the micro elements that create a soundscape for that particular brand?
We always say we want to be able to tell a full brand story when we create sounds for brands, but also create those meaningful connections with all audiences. We've been doing that work in sonic branding for a number of years now, but I would say that only in the last few, as audio-first platforms have emerged, meaning your voice assistants, your Amazon Alexa, the way you might be able to, you know, again, provide voice prompts within your car, your navigation system, all of these interfaces where the visual aspect of it is going away. And I think that's a shift that has really emerged in the last handful of years that I think a lot of folks are still kind of playing catch up to in terms of understanding that, you know, when we create sonic branding, we think about the sound of a brand it isn't necessarily about just writing a jingle that shows up in advertising. What we want to do is really be thinking holistically about how we can sort of tie together an entire ecosystem of sound for a brand. And so if somebody is going from, say, a retail space to engaging on a mobile app to something else that is being brought to you by a brand, that sound can tie all those things together.
That's so true. But I like your point about being very thoughtful about the sound as part of an overall user experience. And I'm glad to hear that companies are thinking very deeply about it, and folks like you are helping companies design and create this kind of vocabulary of sound that they could use in different kinds of contexts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of the fun part of what we get to do as music creators and as sound creators and producers here, is think about how we can sort of reinvent a sonic identity to show up in all these different places or unique experiences, and or as technology evolves and something new emerges, you know, how might we be able to carry this equity forward? Again, with this idea that we really want to be creating cohesion across all these places and all these ways that these brands might be showing up in our lives.
I was going to ask you about your emotional experience with sound or music. I understand you're a jazz musician, is that right?
Yeah, that's my career has taken many twists and turns, but that's certainly one of the major stops in it, for sure.
Yeah, and I've often heard the jazz musicians are among a very select group who experience flow all the time, because in the moment, you have to come up with something that feels good, that feels right. Tell us about your experiences with music or sound where you felt completely transported, or there was a significant moment that you could share with us.
I think just to kind of build on what you're saying about jazz and, you know, improvised musics for a moment, you know, I think that all music is about communication and maybe dialogue, self-expression. And, you know, I think jazz is somewhat different in the sense that it can be much more about creating a spontaneous moment between musicians or even just with one musician. I think for me, when I think of those moments that are transcendent, they really have been about communication. And I think also about listening. When I was in college, I had the real pleasure of studying with Anthony Braxton, who's a MacArthur Genius Grant winning composer. And I then went on and worked with him very closely for 10 years to help him sort of develop all of his large scale works, which include opera. It's almost hard to explain in a way, but I'll never forget having a session with one of his mentees, I guess you'd say, one of his close collaborators, and I were in a room playing, and this is a cornetist, his name's Taylor Hobinum, also a great friend, and I was playing piano, and I remember we were trying to improvise together, and Taylor stopped me, and he said, "You're thinking way too hard about this." You know, he felt like I was trying to analyze what he was saying as a musician or improvising at the moment on his cornet. And I was trying to respond and be very methodical about this interaction. And so kind of demanded this like greater sense of freedom while also just closely listening at the same time. It's so hard to explain. I hope I'm doing an okay job explaining this, but it's just a really, I just remember my ears were ringing after that. And not in the sense that I was hearing, you know, like a high piercing sound, you know, like hearing damage style. It was just, I remember walking out of that room after doing this kind of musical exercise for like an hour. And I just felt like the whole world had just been amplified, you know, and I just remember like walking back across, you know, because I was in college. So back across like the college quad or whatever it was, and just any sound, whether it was traffic or birds, I just felt like I had suddenly had this like hyper awareness of what I was hearing around me in my environment. It was a very, very intense experience that obviously I haven't forgotten, that really feels like one of those moments. You know, another one I could say, I was on tour on and off for a few years with an amazing Brazilian band called Os Mutantes. They're kind of the Brazilian Beatles, you could say. I just remember getting invited to be up on stage and duet, right? And it's just one of those like out-of-body experiences that you have in a moment where if you can just figure out how to kind of let go and again, just really tap into sort of that subconscious emotional response that you're having to what you're hearing. Those are two examples I can think of that just have been these powerful moments. But, you know, one was really about listening closely and thinking more about listening than making sound and making noise. And the other was really about communicating and being so locked in with somebody else in that moment that you kind of create this sort of electricity between between you and that other person.
That's terrific insight, yeah. My question is, how do you close the gap between, you know, the big, rich emotionality of music and the very functional, focused outcomes desired of sonic branding?
There's like a couple layers to how you can answer that. One is just how do you kind of maintain this sense of curiosity and excitement about what I'm doing as a creator and avoid that sort of level of cynicism that, you know, our goal is to manipulate the masses for better or for worse. I really come at it from like a pure place. When we start working with a brand, the first thing that we will make before anything else is what we call a theme. And that very much borrows from the world of film score. You know, you think about those iconic themes from Star Wars, you know, or anything else that John Williams has written, you know, really from Jurassic Park to Indiana Jones, you hear those themes and those melodies and you instantly are taken to a place. And if that's an emotional response that we have, as well as, you know, there's a memory trigger there. The first time I heard this in a theater, I remember that feeling. So I would say the vast majority of the time, that's the first thing that we start with creating for a brand is that a longer form theme. And I think that's how we sort of get to like what hopefully feels like that goosebump factor. We want to tell in that piece of music the whole story of the brand, those highs and those lows and those like big moments or those more intimate moments or sort of the full emotional range of what that brand expression could be. Especially with my team, we're always talking about how do we create things that feel really record credible, film score credible. They fit into culture. This doesn't feel like a piece of quote unquote advertising music or however you define something feeling inauthentic. You know, we want to create something that feels real. And then that becomes our fabric that we can then cut these smaller pieces away or create other smaller moments by pulling from sort of that overarching DNA. That's one of the ways that I think we try to approach that exact sort of challenge that you're talking about, which is how we can use this, again, as like a force for good in our lives, you know, talking about this idea of sonic humanism and that being our guiding principle is really about humanity and seeing that what we can be creating has value that maybe is tangible, but also, you know, contributes to what our world sounds like. And we feel a responsibility in that. We want to do right by that as opposed to kind of making the whole world sound like a casino.
Right. That would be very
unfortunate. We haven't done our jobs. You know what I mean? We want to create a world that, you know, is using sound in positive ways.
Right. That would be so depressing if the whole world sounded like a casino.
Yes. Sensory overload.
Right. You've given me a lot to think about in terms of sonic identities and branding. So I'll pay more attention to it. But what is encouraging to me is knowing that folks like you and others are paying attention to all these micro sounds. They are not just picked or plucked randomly, but that there is an underlying intentionality, that is thought, science, and very encouragingly, humanism associated with all of it. So that to me is extremely rewarding. As I think about identities of voice agents that we use in voice interfaces, if you were to pay some money, you can get the voice of a celebrity to be the agent's voice that you hear from Alexa, right?
Yeah.
And it's not very difficult to do because once you have the voice signature down, essentially it's deep fakes. That's what they do. Once you have enough voice features, you could reconstruct anybody's voice or speech as long as, you know, it's ethical. That's the challenge, yes.
Oh, absolutely. Like I've changed the voice on my iPhone to perceived male voice because I'm just tired of hearing all the helpful assistants be female or perceived as female out in the world. And so I'd rather be able to tell Siri what to do and not feel like I'm speaking to an old school stereotyped kind of female secretary vibe. You know, when I'm trying to get that information. So, you know, again, that's a personal choice that I've made. And I know that even over time, I think Apple has rolled out more considerations and choices in terms of voice and the ways that you can even hear race in voice and in speech so that people can feel like, hey, I'm speaking to somebody that I resonate with, or I feel like this technology was created with me in mind. You know, again, those are subtle changes that kind of get rolled out with like an update to your iOS, but you know, are a big deal for people that may not have otherwise ever heard, you know, an assistant like this sound like them or come close to sounding like them.
Right. Very interesting.
All right. So we have a little test or a quiz right now. Sometimes we call this Name That Tune. I think we're going to hold this more like a little bit of a sonic ink blot test. So here's how we're going to do this. We will play a sound, and then I'm going to want to ask you sort of, what do you hear in that sound musically? How does that make you feel?
Oh, I like that. I like feeling.
What do you imagine is happening, or what does that make you think of in that moment?
Oh, I like this. You know, I like to give quizzes to my students, but now, yes, you put me on the spot. I'm ready to go for it.
Cool. All right, so let's get started with the first one. Let's play the first example.
Wow, that's grand. That would be something for a big-time movie.
Yes. So you hear that orchestra, right? You hear that big sweeping sound. How does that make you feel?
Makes me feel very powerful, I think. And it makes me feel like I'm part of something very big and massive.
I love that. So I think you already said maybe you felt like it was part of a movie, but kind of what do you imagine is happening in that moment when you hear a sound like that?
That's sort of a victorious moment. Something that sort of leads up to a crescendo and gives you a breakthrough moment in the movie.
Yeah, so a little bit of anticipation and sort of that sense of payoff, maybe.
Yes.
So this is the Sonic Identity for HBO in terms of the theme, the thematic music that's associated with the brand.
Absolutely, I get it. Yeah, this one does strike a chord.
Let's listen to the second example here.
A whistle, I think. That could be kind of a new tech sound, something in mobile technology or a video game, yeah?
So it's actually a crunch. This is a sonic identity that we created for Nature Valley. They really wanted to understand how they related to that sound of the product and also really wanted to evoke through the brand and kind of what the stories they're trying to tell, this idea of the joy of the outdoors, the joy of nature. And so we kind of came up with this idea of the call of the crunch. We have sort of this call of the whistle, right? Which is something that you can do as you're out hiking on the trail or out with your friends, something anybody can do, and having that being answered by the crunch. And then let's play the third example that we have here. Ooh. So what do you hear there?
Some feeling of movement. This could be a digital sound, I think. I mean, sort of for a digital product, it could be something like mobile phones or anything along those lines, I think, or a tech company, maybe.
So it is. There is a tech aspect to this. This is something that we created for the brand Polaris, which is a global leader in power sports. They create all-terrain vehicles, snowmobiles, on-road vehicles, motorcycles. And their whole idea is this sense of think outside, how to think outside of the box. So as a company that is building sort of machines and vehicles that allow us to engage with the outdoors, we also just really wanted to dial into this sense of fandom for them, right? Mm. Building that emotional connection between what is really this premium technology and the user.
So those are the three. That's the Rorschach test here for the ink blot, yes?
Yes, I think you did a great job.
Oh, it's very nice. Yeah, thank you so much. Good illustrations. Amy, thank you so much for joining me on Life Meet Tech. I did not know there was so much to how sounds and identities are created for brands. I learned a lot. I have not paid attention to sonic branding, and now I will.
Thank you, Prabhu. It was a pleasure sharing a bit about sort of what we're learning and what we're doing at Bade Music with you today.
Terrific. Thank you. Life Meet Tech is presented by WKAR in association with Michigan State University. Executive producer, Melanie Paul. Audio engineer, Drew Hill. And hosted by me, Prabhu David. Please subscribe wherever you're listening right now so you don't miss an episode. And I'll see you next time on Life Meet Tech.